when there's three different people who want to do three different things.
Yes, I got you. Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah, I was, well, yeah. No, I don't have a good answer to that other than, like I said, I know I'm the new guy, and so that's why I just purely want to go in with the attitude of I'm here to support.
Well, that's also, for you, you're what I'd consider a professional player as opposed to the people who have played in the look how badass my character is type games all the time. Which those guys have a much more difficult time adjusting to something like this.
And that's why I was kind of drifting is, as you know, I'm a problem solver. I want to discover. I'm in it for the adventure of the adventure, not the treasure of the adventure. Maybe I'm just putting this on me, but how, maybe Chris, this is a better one for Chris, but like I said, I see the colors of the painting, but I don't know the painting yet. I know all of the terms. I've got a big advantage over a lot of other new players coming in. How do I not metagame, I guess you could say? Because if you're like this, like, oh, look, this thing is happening. And I'm like, oh, I remember something about that. But my character would have no knowledge of it. Chris, did you suffer from that at all? I mean, I know you've been playing long enough, but...
Well, I think... Just because over the years, I've gone on so many no-brainers where, like, Logan's doing another mod, and, like, because I would game all the time, and he'd have new people playing, and they haven't. So,
Can you explain no-brainers for the studio audience?
Okay, so a no-brainer is going on the same mod that you've already been on, which kind of seems like it would be boring. However, it's not if you do it right. So, like, I've already been on, like, mod. Like, we need to go to this dungeon, we'll say. And we need to go get this item in the dungeon, okay? And we were given this job by Guy X. First time I go in on there, I had fun, great. Next time, okay, so that's all, like, that's what the majority of the group hasn't done. So that's what they want to do. And so now I make myself I take myself a bit out of, because I'm always, like the leader, one of the leaders of the crew. I will take myself out of that and be like, so what do you guys want to do about all this? And then, like, I'll make it so, like I will give my skills to them, like, or if they start losing it, because I've done it so often, I know how to kind of help bring it back without giving them hints. Like, I'll be like, well, is there anything you would like me to do? I am good at all these different things. Why don't you tell me what you would like me to do?
Yeah.
And then they will be like, oh, well, you're good at this. What do you know about this? And then, like, I'll roll my skill, and then I'll give the information that's on there. So that way, it helps them get through it as well. And I'm also being very helpful and making new scenes as we're doing so. Because this is very, like, with Logan's campaigns, they're all very, it's all about the scene. It's all about what happened, like, that part of the story. It's not... And that's how I always look at it. Like, oh, that's an awesome scene. And then I'll just remember that scene for like a long time. And that's what I always take from it.
Yeah, I agree. I guess that kind of answers my question then is because I already built my character to avoid, I guess you could say, the metagaming or leading. Because I've played several no-brainers with Logan over the years back in the day. And that's one thing that Logan, you just brought up a good point, is Logan is really good at is he allows for cinematics. He allows for cinematic combats and just pulling crazy things. So, yeah.
Well, also, one of the nice things about the way that this campaign set up is that I was able to allow people to play their own characters. Like, if you said, I want to play Suede, Suede hasn't made an appearance in this campaign, I'd be like, yeah, go ahead. That's why Chris is able to play Doc Fulton, who had been in a campaign. You don't start with all the skills. You start with the same number of skills as everybody else does, same number of points, but you have patchy memories of stuff. So that makes it if Doc Fulton's like, it looks like another fucking Athakwa attack, you know, and shit. He's not metagaming at this point because, you know, he's come up against Athakwa in the past and, you know, he has some memories, even though he doesn't necessarily have the skills anymore or the spell Banish Athakwa or some shit. You know, he goes, we keep finding these frozen corpses. I'm leaning toward Athakwa or Wendigo or some bullshit like that. So, you know, let's buy a space heater, you know.
Boy, wouldn't that throw Jason if I start out as Suede, because nobody knows. You don't probably don't even remember what Suede started out as. What was his career?
Doctor.
Actor.
Actor?
He was an actor in like the kind of like the Truman bubbles where he's in the future and he was making future movies and things like that.
Well, I remember making future movies. I thought that came up later. I remember you made the RPCs do amazingly stupid shit, like in the cyberpunk thing. It's like we're all got dresses, Robin Hood and his Merry Men.
They have the cinematic.
Yeah, bows and arrows. This will be fun.
Yes. Yep.
I remember we had GoPros on basically before GoPros were a thing.
Mm-hmm. But you brought up information and stuff. That's one of the themes or things I'm going for in this campaign is I want it to be kind of like the TV series Lost, except not piss off the fans. Where there's a lot of like information and mysteries and strange shit going on. It's like, what does this mean and stuff? Although I watched a video on what was up with Lost and I was like, that's rather lame. So, yeah. Although if the one actor who always remained fat on the island had been eating the other people, I would have fucking given them their star just for that.
Yeah.
You know, if they discovered that later.
Yep.
What else you guys got?
I actually always kind of describe your campaign for like people that are a little bit older that would know as like sliders. Like you just pop into a new like dimension basically, and things could be the same but then a little bit different, and then like one little thing could be completely different and changing.
Yeah. I like how it's set up. I mean, because we've had stuff that has been in previous campaigns like Land of the Lost. That was in a campaign that was between the Swamp House that you guys played and this one. And it was when I was running mostly police procedurals and forensic games. So Pete, when he got there, it was a whole zone that for him was giant Easter egg. It's like, this again. Okay. So I like that kind of stuff. I really like Easter eggs. I'm glad that Ralph is coming in partway through on the campaign because my campaigns start super basic and then shit gets layered onto it. And so by now, after like 1,000 hours of playtime or something like that, if Ralph showed up and goes, I need a full briefing, then the air players would be like, no, we don't have the time. Let me sum up.
Not that you can get some of the briefings anymore anyway. Fucking Yana briefing.
Oh my God. The Yana briefing is my favorite, where she would bring up stuff about 5 minutes after you needed to know it really bad and go, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. And the players are like.
Yeah, that's always pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, you got like when me, Matt, and Pete get together, and like we can have a whole session about what's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like go on errands. Like, oh, we only have a couple hours left. Oh, well, let's go take care of these errands. Like for anybody else, they'd be like actual adventures, and we're just like, yeah, we got that. Okay, done. Okay, done. Okay, done. Okay, good.
Right.
We good? All right. See you guys next time.
it's a wild ride. Unfortunately, it's a fuck ton of work. Jason had mentioned that when I'm prepping, it's almost like I'm doing a TV series and I have a certain amount of stuff I have to fill. Like I've been working till like between 10 and midnight for the last few days, just trying to crank out some more shit. But I've been prepping for about 3 months now. And so that's a lot of fucking prep.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. That's why I have no sympathy for people who can't run one adventure. It's like, yeah, it'll take you a couple hours to figure that out. Do it when you're on the toilet, you know.
See, I'm glad Chris and I were able to groom you back at the Swamp House days the way we used to plow through stuff.
You guys are merciless.
Okay.
So the story.
Oh, I was just like, it was a Cthulhu mod. It was like one of the big ones. And like me and Ralph walked in, like it was some, it was like a, like an office. And the guy was like sitting behind the desk and he's like, oh, I need you to go do this for me. You need to find this. It's an evil thing, blah, blah, blah. And I remember we just looked at each other, stood up and blazed. And you were like, what the fuck are you doing? Like you were just mind blown. And we're like, and like it was a dramatic combat right away and we killed him and you're like, what the fuck? And we both were like, yeah, clearly that's the main bad guy. What? And it was like a week long prep for you.
Yeah.
And you were so pissed. I think we like drank and watched movies for the rest of the night. You were so pissed you didn't even want to play anymore. You're like, nah, fuck that. And after that is when we did the whole, the pause, like the more you do in the adventure, the more pause you get is where that came from. Because until then, it was just like, you finish your mod, you get this much pause. So we're like, oh, that was quick 10. And you're just, rah, fuck you guys.
That happened more than once, too. There was some guy fighting another guy in an alley. And Ralph.
Yeah, that was the fantasy. That was Onyx.
Yeah. You guys are just horrible people is why. But, okay. So what else have we got to talk about? Because I'm guessing we're not going to get together for very many of these talks because they're kind of a pain in the ass to get everybody scheduled and gaming season starting soon. Of course, if we do, that's great. These things are, for some reason, getting more people watching them than the games. I don't understand it.
So here's a question for you, Logan. Mm-hmm. As maybe not directly with me, but in general, what do you expect from your new players?
It's what really, really irritates me is when we've got somebody who goes through the whole procedure of making a character, and because I'm on purpose, it's not like, here's your character. I'm giving you a pre-made. No, if somebody doesn't have the gumption to get through the making a character procedure, they're not going to have the gumption to show up in game. I mean, making a character is like under an hour or two. Gaming is double that or more. But what really irritates me is when they show up, do a great job. Everybody's like, you did a great job. And they're like, I had fun. And that's the last we ever see of that motherfucker. It's like, I can read people. I can tell that they were having a good time. There's a lot of laughter and stuff. And then they just disappear. It's like, did you really want to talk about gaming? You know? So I think I've always said that if I can get somebody to play in like 3 or 4 sessions, they're probably going to game with me for a long time unless something horrible happens, like their work schedule completely shifts or something like that. You know, well, eventually your shit will shift back or, you know, you'll get on the schedule for other stuff, Chris, or you'll start sharking it or something like that will happen. Because, yeah, you have too much fun to just blow it off. So, but yeah, I think I think having some gumption, people who will ask questions, I think it's too much to ask for people who are good at reading people, because most people are shit at reading people, but who are like they'll enter into the unspoken mentor trainee thing with the experienced players. I think that's important because the people who don't succeed are the ones who go in with either the D&D mentality or like, no, I'll figure it out. And then they flounder for the session, 2 sessions, 5 sessions or whatever, because they won't say, I'll just ask one of these guys who seems to know what they're doing. I've never seen a value in trying to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, I've got another question, if you're okay with that.
Well, get now, Chris involved with some shit too, because
I will. He could give me his perspective on this one also. Ooh. And in no way is this meant to corner Logan on anything he said in the past on the boards, because I've only got limited access. So here we go. So, example, lock picking. I know what a bumpkey is, but
yeah,
you know, can I make one? Probably with enough practice, but I can't cast a fireball, or I can't jump off of a ship with a two-handed sword and stab a kraken in the eye. So at what point do you rely on the player's knowledge and skill versus the character's?
I'm going to let Chris answer that first while I ponder it, because he's good at coming up with shit on top of his head.
So I think that although the characters will know things, which is great. But when the characters know things and the player doesn't, then you're relying just upon the GM and the GM's knowledge of it. So to me, if you have knowledge of it, it's kind of like that is your bonus. Like, so I've gone out and researched, like, this is the kind of player I want to be. And so, like, say I don't know anything about, you know, being a thief, but I want to play a thief and I want to know that really well. So I go out, I learn how to lockpick. So now I have like real life knowledge. Well, then I can say, well, this is the things I do. I think as a good GM as well, we'll see like, oh, well, this person knows. And even if they did a quick Google search, like, is this guy full of shit? Or, oh, he really knows. Oh, okay. Why not give him a bonus? Why not like have like, okay, so you know more than I do. So I could see how that could work. And when players get more, that's when the whole player creativity comes in, because we've fostered some very creative players that will come up with ideas and solutions to things. And that's where, when Logan has his three, maybe we come up with four and five ways of solving the adventure, because we've come up with something creatively where it's not like we're just going like, oh, well, I'm a doctor. I'm playing Doc Fulton. I'm a doctor. So I'm going to do my doctor thing at this. And Logan like knows that, like, when we do the hacking thing, Logan knows he doesn't know anything about hacking, but we have a couple people that know a little bit about it. And they were like, well, this is what we do. This is what we do. And like, okay, well, I don't know a lot about that, but I'll take what you're saying. And why don't you make a roll? And then, you know, and he'll make it so it works. And if it sounds like something that would potentially work. All right, well, let's explore that then.
Yeah. How I would like handle a bump key in specific is at that point, it's not lock picking so much as lock lore. You need to know this is a 5-pin master lock. And do you have the key? Like if it's a common lock and you pull out the key and you go up and you go pick, your total picking time is about 10 seconds. Put the key in the lock, hit it with the hammer, done.
Yep.
But if it's not a common lock, if you don't have that key on there ready to go, for people who don't know what bump keys are, Google it. Or I might even say, it's a common lock. Give me a lock picking at a large bonus. Especially if you've got time to sit there and go, is it this key?
No.
This key. I'm just going to try all 20 of my keys. Fuck it. You know, it'll take it because it takes about as long as picking a lock if you don't know what kind of lock it is or which of your keys it is or something. But if your key will fit and you can hit it correctly and stuff, yeah, you're going to be in. I would agree with Chris in that, like, I like it when the players do things like, for example, they've got a ladder that is pretty much like a pole, and it has like little petals, like flower petal things, and you set it up and they go and it becomes this ladder that's a pole, and like if, I think ninjas used it or some shit. If the players are Googling that and they're like, I found this on Amazon for $35 and shit, and I go ahead and order one of those if they're in a zone that has Amazon and stuff, because there's a lot of shit you can just buy, you know. Or another clever thing that is a real life escape thing that if they looked up is, for example, let's say you're on the second or third floor and that's where your room is. And you've got a window that opens up completely, right? But there's only one way in and out of your your room, that's the door, but they've got these rope ladders that you can buy in real life, and you attach it to like your radiator or something really sturdy in your room. And then if bad shit happens, you toss the rope ladder out the fucking window and you can scurry down it, as opposed to, I'm going to try climbing the house that I kind of made hard to climb because I don't want people climbing up into my room. If the players are doing that kind of shit, that's like Chris said, that's good players. You know, that's people who are doing shit ahead of time. The biggest thing that a lot of players dislike in this campaign is fast talk, because you have to real life fast talk. That's been a staple of it for years. And they're like, but I want to play somebody who's good at fast talking, but I'm not good at fast talking. My response is, don't play somebody who's good at fast. This is a talking game. That's all we do is sit around and talk. While I don't expect you to like know a lot about swords or how to load a goat's foot lever action crossbow or something, you do need to be able to talk if you're wanting to bullshit somebody. At least come up with something fairly feasible, like, I'm an insurance adjuster. And, oh, you're boring as fuck. Okay. And then, you know, then you make your fast talk. Maybe you'll get a bonus if you come up with something good, or maybe you'll get negative if you're like, I'm just here to investigate the grisly murders. Nothing interesting. What? Which has actually happened in the campaign. So
good answers.
Yeah. Chris, your turn to come up with a question.
Yeah. What?
Okay.
I'm very reactive. I don't do the whole questioning thing very well.
React to me asking you for a good question.
Is that good enough there? All right, here we go. There you go, Logan. That's just for you.
Is that one of those gang signs I've been reading about?
I want a little sandwich.
That was such a good meme. I knew Chris would get a kick out of that one.
Oh, yeah. I laughed out loud. Legit.
Something that Jay asked me about on the notorious Logan doesn't know how to record and so it got lost recording was my campaign is a mix of a sandbox and mods. Mm-hmm. I've noticed at the beginning of my prep time, I'll make more sandboxy shit, and then when I start feeling the time crunch, I'll go mod. And how is that possible? There's like the ice tower in the MMO zone was a good example of, you could go over there and play with it, or you could ignore it or look at it from a distance. But when you went over there, then you're on a mod. You could leave the mod, which the players did several times. But after a certain point, when they did some other stuff, then other things began to happen, and now it festered. I don't think I'll give anything away if I mention that there was like ice torques that were in there, and the players took them out. And the players have really no conception of security. And so they just left it in a house that was for their use, and other people got into the house that was for their use and took some of the stuff. And then they discovered, oh no, these replicate on their own. And then, you know, it became a thing where now people in that village, because it didn't get dealt with immediately, then other people got hold of some of them, and then it started replicating, and now the people formed their own thing, their own coalition of people wearing these ice torques. And then they start overthrowing their leaders and stuff, and it just kept slowly spiraling out of control. Even when the players are like, we take all the ones we have, we go to a whole different world, we bury them, fuck you. What do you mean some asshole scavenger's digging where we buried? He was watching us the whole time, wasn't he? Motherfucker. You know, and but they're not gonna work here because magic doesn't work in this zone, so fuck him. Unless he gets it, you know, and so now it's a whole different festering thing, you know. So that's the sandbox versus the 5-hour plot.
So I've got a little bit of a question kind of based off of what you said triggered. I understand when a player is playing, they should be focused on the game and playing at the in the moment. Now, me as a new player is an example. I'm never afraid to use myself as an example. Coming in, there's also an in-game wiki or an in-game board. And let's say somebody mentions the ice tower. I'm like, can I look on the in-game board to see if there's any reference to ice tower?
There's one of the things that we've got in this game that I think I was a little bit nervous to try it out, but then once we tried it, it seems to work out good, is the PCs have access to these bracelets, and it allows them to do different things, including look at the in-game board and the wiki. And so once you get a bracelet, and I've told the PCs, as far as plot goes, they're completely unhackable. The PCs put in, they did bother to actually put in a scrambler thing so that other people couldn't hack. And I was like, great, you've done the bare minimum. Somebody with computer skill made that. And I'm just going to tell you, because I like the PCs being able to talk on the in-game board and look at the wiki and add to the wiki, I'm just going to say, for plot reasons, that shit's totally unhackable by the NPCs. Sometimes the NPCs will make an unencrypted post.
Yeah.
You know, and the PCs are like, we're going to get your bracelet away from you, motherfucker. You're not going to have access to that shit soon. But the PCs have plenty of these bracelets, and they're pretty good, unless it's like newer players only, and they don't know that they should give the new guy a bracelet. But fortunately, I think you'll be starting off playing with experienced players. But as soon as you get one, huh? Me?
You.
I don't have a fucking bracelet, so. But yeah, I know. Hopefully somebody else experience will get in. But yeah, if they can give you a bracelet and stuff, then as soon as they do, I have Pete add you to the in-game board.
No problem.
So, and then you can also look at the wiki and stuff. And then once you have access to that, you can go nuts studying and just bring up shit to Chris. Like, Joe, I read about the ice tower, and he'll be like, fucking ice tower, you know, and then you'll have that conversation.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that the in-game was really in-game and not.
Oh yeah. I wanted the players to be able to coordinate stuff a little bit, because that's going back to what players are good at and bad at. Like what GMs normally are bad at is foreshadowing. Most GMs that I've ever seen in my life, absolutely horrible at foreshadowing. What players are absolutely horrible at normally is planning ahead. Like, I think that's one of the ways you can always tell expert or bad player from a good player from an expert player. The bad player will be like, we have to charge in there and kill that guy. That's what to do. The good player will go, okay, this is how we're going to get in. The expert player will say, this is how we're going to get out. The escape is more important than getting in. That's hard for players, that kind of planning, because they don't want, like in real life, if we were going to break into a warehouse in real life, because, you know, we're helping the cops, but the cops can't let anybody else know, that kind of shit, right? Keeping it legal. And if us three were going to break into a warehouse, I guarantee we'd spend over an hour sitting around, possibly with whatever blueprints we could get, talking about shit. We might even like, we're going to get some other vehicles and like leave them in these different spots and shit, so that if we're running, the keys are in the ignition, ready to go, or under the hood or whatever, you know, we're going to have everything set up.
Gassed up, ready to go.
we're not going to just be like, yeah, we'll just get in. I'm sure we'll find a way out, way to escape, you know. Sure, they got a bunch of guys riding around on motorcycles and machine guns, but we'll deal with that when we get to it. We would never say that. But when people are gaming, they immediately skip to that. Like, no, we will never, the GM will never throw anything at us that we can't handle. Because D&D. Challenge ratings.
Now, I got another question here, and it kind of goes with this
Hold on a minute.
I'm sorry.
Chris, do you have anything to add to that? Or Ralph, do you have anything to add to that? Keep in mind your question, Ralph. Don't forget it.
I definitely agree with that. And then again, there's always sometimes you just get, like, I know I get frustrated, and sometimes I'm just like, just fuck it, let's go. I'm fucking sick of it. I'm just tired of y'all. We're just going to fucking do it. And if you survive, great. If you don't, I can get out.
That's a 2 a.m. That's a 2 a.m. hour when we make those decisions, Chris. And it still happens today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the 2 to 4 a.m. decisions are always the worst. They were always the worst. The funniest thing, though, because were you in the game where they ended the campaign, Ralph?
No, I missed the ending. And that was one of my opening adventures, was to fucking seal all that shit up.
Got it. Because Chris discovered that I'd put in, like, the biggest Easter egg ever into this game. From the game that you see that burned out 1,000-yard stare of Vietnam is reoccurring in his head look. Yeah, he discovered that in this game. And that's part of the advantage of an old GM with white hair and shit, is they can bring back shit from 15, 20 years ago and go, it's still going, motherfucker. And Chris is like, no.
Right. No. And, you know, and this is something I don't think, you know, you could always edit this part out, is, Chris, why Suede was so focused and hoarded so many paws for so long is one of his first adventures had to deal with Ghost Wheel. Mm-hmm. I got him trapped in the jewel in the scepter of the prince or king. I think the king was missing, so the prince had it. And it was so nasty, and I understood what it was, who created it, and why. I was saving up enough paws to learn how to create, like, the primal pattern from that dude in the basement. And Logan's
Dworkin?
Like, yeah, there you go. Yeah, he's like, save up between like 5,000 and 10,000 paws. I'm like, I will learn the primal pattern. I'm gonna go create my own universe, close this one behind me, and just walk away. You know? So yes, all of the adventures I went on was just for the sole purpose of fleeing the universe.
Okay.
Why did you guys give it to them? Why did you give it back? Why?
I didn't. Like, that was the whole... That was not the plan. It was a misknown nod, and they staring at Jeff for, like, the next half hour, thinking, what the fuck did you just do?
Good old Gazafeld.
Oh, my God.
So what was your thing there, Ralph? Your question?
Oh, my question was, after reminiscing, was the I lost it. It's gone.
Okay. I got something else I can bring up real quick. The biggest problem with the sandbox environment as opposed to mod is I've started, somebody else called it this. I don't remember who called it this, but I have since started calling it, is when players go wandering around shopping for things they can't afford. In other words, they'll go, like, look at 4 or 5 different potential plot things, and it'll be like, that looks hard. I don't know if I'm qualified for that. And then they'll go look at something else, go, that doesn't look easy either. I'm going to go check out. And they will fucking do that for most of the game and then bitch that they couldn't find anything that they could do. And my answer is, like, everything looks hard. If it was like, oh, this is super easy, all you got to do is just go do this thing, and then you solve, somebody had done it by now. Some NPC had been like, oh, I'm just going to go put some sand over there, and that'll solve that.
All right, Indy. I did remember my question, though.
Uh-huh.
And if I could chime in. Items, as an example. So I'm playing a second story guy. He's used to getting in, and more importantly, getting out.
Uh-huh.
So, items, as an example. If I'm like Logan, my character will always wear a very light-colored shirt under his dark shirt. You know, he'll always have a clip-on tie on. And
did you watch that CIA lady on the Quick Change thing?
I've seen her. I have seen that video before. So
yeah,
but you know where I'm going with this. Do you eventually just assume, and I know you never assume, but if my character is always dressing like this, do I have to dictate it every single day to you how I'm dressing? Or if you know this is my, you know, well, MO.
I'm going to let Chris answer on clothing. Could you tell him how clothes seem to work in this campaign?
Well, I think it is kind of like that, where like, this is how I usually dress. And this is what, like, so like if we go and do some wild shit and the next scene, like we're doing something else, we're probably miraculously in those clothing, like in like a duplicate of that. Like even like, oh, there was an explosion. Half my clothes got blown off. The next day, you know, we're out event, you know, we're off doing our next thing. And yes, we're probably all dressed that same way again.
Yeah. Or what could happen sometimes is I'll describe how the players are dressed. It won't be like how you necessarily wanted to be dressed. Like, for example, Freddie, he has a special way he likes dress. He likes dressing kind of the goth, long black coat, stuff like that. But sometimes it's like, you know, I'll describe everybody dressed in like rugged adventurer clothing that has like leather patches on the arms and knees and stuff like that. And, you know, it's made of like canvas and stuff, because for some reason, that's just how they're dressed then. But if you've got like one of the things I've been trying to encourage the players to do is if the players make bases or stashes of stuff, like the old green box from Delta Green, where you've got like storage sheds that you rent out and stuff for long periods of time. And you've got like 10 sets of your quick change clothing in there and stuff. Unless you manage to lead a bad guy or worse yet, the other PCs to the storage shed. that's one of the funny things that happens. And it's this game kind of sometimes reminds me of the LARPs that we would do, where you would have different groups that knew different things and they didn't share it with the other groups. In the LARPs, it's because they're like, it's my precious, it's mine. And they try to do that. So they're the guys. And this, it's not because they're necessarily trying to do that. It's just that either they didn't think it was important or they forgot about it, or it's a Yana briefing or whatever kind of weird reasons for that. But like sometimes the PCs, like Scott and Sheila, they're a married couple who play. They had gotten their own house in one of the zones, or they had rented their own apartment, and they wouldn't fucking let the other PCs know where they lived or anything. They drop them off at their thing, and then they take like a different way to their apartment to make sure they're not being followed or anything, and then sleep there, and then go pick up the PCs the next day, because Yana would do things like leave dead skinned humans in the basement of like the PC's mansion and just forget about them. And then our PCs would show up and there'd be like a rotting smell coming from the basement. And they'd be like, oh, sanity loss. Oh God, no, now we got to clean this up.
Nice. Yeah, I was just curious a little bit about that, you know, on how you were going to be treating items. And, you know, because I think even before you talked about that video, I gave you like that analogy, like, you know, if you want to go and pose as a Best Buy manager, how you could just go through Walmart, grab a couple little things, and now all of a sudden you look like a Best Buy manager, because that's probably where they buy their clothes too, you know?
The unfortunate thing about a campaign is that it's not like in a movie where you can have like a cool set laid out and I can have like little visual cues in the background and stuff. So I might just say something like, you're in a Walmart, and I'll let the players make different assumptions. And then they have to ask questions like, hey, is there stuff that if I was just to go and pick it up at different things, I could, you know, dress as a Walmart manager? I might say, give me a prestidigitation roll. You're doing it super smooth and seven. You may be even taking somebody's name badge off. I'm like, hey, buddy, you know, as you go by or whatever. But that does bring up another good thing. In this campaign, one of the things, and I think Chris may agree with me, that makes it very different from other campaigns is it's really hard to retain stuff. Like Chris has got two different things that he's managed somehow to retain. He's got a golf club that he loves very much, and he has a lightsaber they made. And keeping those things for him really hard. Sometimes I'll start off in scenes without him and be like, I wonder where it is, because I don't just say your shit has disappeared, but it might be like if I'm starting PCs off in a different zone or something, it might be in this other zone. So they'll be like, ah, shit, I gotta either I'll know where it is and have to go back for it, or I'll have to explore the multiverse and try to find my shit, you know? But unlike most campaigns where it's all about stuff accumulation, in this, it's all about knowledge accumulation. Chris, would you have anything to chime in on that?
No, that's definitely how it is. Like, I know that there are sometimes we do get, I don't know, I think some of the stuff, quote unquote, that we really like for the most part, like, well, at least for me, isn't really like that golf club that, yes, it's a magic item and yes, it's a weapon. However, even if it wasn't, I'd be, you know, I'd want that fucker with me all the time. And that's just the character quirk for it.
Right.
I mean, the lightsaber is nice, but I mean, I don't need to use it
that often.
No, not really. I mean, I'll use whatever is appropriate to wherever we're at. So, I mean, it all depends. And I mean, I like the fact that it's not very stuff driven, where a lot of other campaigns, it's all about just the stuff.
Yeah.
But we do lose stuff so often too, that so you have that whole, you know, artificing thing that you're going to do. It's kind of like, I'm just kind of like, because shit goes away so quickly. Like, I don't even know if I want to invest in any of that. Cause
right.
I invest a whole bunch of points and time, and then boop, I get a card one day that says lose magic item. And if I don't have any magic items for fodder first, I can't do, you know, it's gone.
Yeah. But I mean, if you add the skills, you could make a new one. Also, I would like to point out with the artifact making, those are above the magic item goes bye-bye cards.
I was not aware of that.
Oh yeah. Well, for the amber stuff, that requires a lot of skills. And those are the things, like, even if you threw it out, it would come back unless you're like, nope, I don't want this anymore. Make it go away. Then it'll go away. But you're also limited to how many of those you can have.
Okay.
So those skills, yes, you for that kind of artificing, that'll become like your one cool item, or up to three cool items if you get it in three different trees. But that's super hard.
Gotcha.
So
that's pretty neat. You expanded on that, because that was one of Suede's main items. Hey, I just reach under this table that I'm not looking under, and whoop, here's my sword. You know what I mean?
Let's go. That's actually become like a thing. Like, it's a spell now, basically.
It's a low level spell for a sword.
Yeah, it is. That is really, it is.
Yeah.
Old pocket the sword trick.
Yeah. Highlighter it. That's one of the major changes that I've made with the spells, is now it's easier and harder to get the spells. Before, you would just like, I read the scary book, I pick up Cthulhu Mythos, which is my limiter for how many books I can look at, and hopefully I get some good random spells. Oh, now Logan's letting me spend pause to try to get better random spells. I get rid of all that shit. Now, although Cthulhu books are going to work differently, the players will either like it or hate it for Cthulhu books, just letting you know. But the spells, how they work is, there's like tier one spells that you can go to a different PC and go, know any magic? And they'll be like, yes. And then they'll fail their teaching roles and not be able to teach you anything. But if they succeed, almost all the PCs are just miserable at teaching. But if they make their teaching role and they make their tier one spell, you now have the tier one spell, whatever your learn skill is, right?
Yeah.
And the only way for you to get the tier two spell is to get a crit on the tier one spell. And same for the tier three, tier four, et cetera. And then plus there's branches on it. So even if like both of you had the same magic tree, you might be good at different shit in the same tree. But the easiest way to get spells is if you go, I noticed that there's this whole kind of field of magic missing that I would like to know how to do. I will invent these spells and go through Logan's long, laborious process of getting it approved, because it is a long, laborious process. And then once it gets approved and made into a tree, then you have all the spells you helped make at your learn skill. So
nice.
That in that way, the reason I do that, even though some players are like, you shouldn't do that, I want people to be interested in working on spells. I don't want to do it all myself. I don't have time. I'm busy prepping. So between the spells and adventures, I think PCs would rather have something to do than something to cast.
I got another quick question here. Not that any of these are really quick. So I understand you don't want to play, I want to play a caveman in Logan's world and not know any knowledge of nothing. But, you know, you could play like your character who is high tech, future, you know, heavy laser weapons. Now, can you pick what zone or shadow you're from? Or are you generic plop down?
I always suggest people go for generic plop down, because even if people know the world well enough, like Chris knows quite a bit of the world, but he also knows that sometimes zones go away and sometimes the players stop going to certain zones. Sometimes they only concentrate on new zones. Sometimes the zone radically changes. He's seen all that shit. What would you think about the answer to his question there, Chris?
I would go with, like, see, for me, it's always make your character the way you want it, and then at least make it so you can be versatile in a couple other things. And now, because Logan has so many shadow, like, you can be apart from so many shadows, I don't know, if you went super, like, come from somewhere that's super specialized, I mean, that's great for when we're doing that sort of thing, but if we're not, then you've limited yourself. And now eventually you can like climatize yourself to other places so that you know it all. But I guess it depends on if you care if we never go and do that again. Like if you wanted to be a caveman, be from Land of the Lost, that's great. But know that if that's going to be what you're going to hinder a lot of people if that's all you really want to do. So that I think that kind of goes along with knowing that you want to like help solve the problems or solve the campaign and whatnot. So I guess that's like making sure to have a good character concept that does have a purpose, I guess.
Well, that's one of the cool things about this campaign is you could literally come up with any kind of background. Like I want to be a World War One fighter ace. I've got my plane flying. I bought a specialized dog fighting skill to try to get in tight behind them. You know, I've got some mechanical engineering because sometimes the plane goes down in the field and I've got to fix it. You know, you can have all these different skills that all related to being a World War One fighter ace and stuff. And anytime somebody pulls out a computer, you go, what is that? Is that Satan? You know?
I agree. I was thinking more middle ground, you know, of timeline, if you will. But there's a lot of middle grounds too. You know, like you said, you know, anything from 1970s guy to 1990s guy. What if you want to be Fallout guy from the 50s?
You could totally do that. It works in this game.
It's more for just like a role-playing perspective on how you're perceiving the world.
Sure. You could totally do that. Vault-Tec is your friend.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still, even if you're a Fallout guy, you'd still have a lot of useful skills and stuff.
Absolutely. Like I said, there's that whole mid-range, you know what I'm saying, from the 70s when computers were introduced to, the future. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you could be from pretty much anywhere, anytime that you wanted to be. I'm a Star Trek guy. Whatever.
Because we do have space stuff, too.
There is some space stuff. I mean, with all the skills, when you're in a skill-based game, because I think that the 2,000 points that people start with, pretty generous amount of skills, not like Call of Cthulhu where it's like, here's your 200 points of skills. You suck at most things. You're going to die really soon. You may even have a heart attack on the way to the mod. We don't know. But with 2,000 points to spread around, you can be good at a lot of different shit. I mean, not great at it for a starting character, but you can definitely have a lot of stuff, you know, at 60% if you wanted to.
No, it was very generous because when I created my second story guy, he's got his primary skills, he's got a secondary, and I still have enough points to get tertiary skills, you know, at around 50% still. You know, it was nice. Oops, thinking about modern.
Well, yeah. Plus, with only four stats, it's cool because you can make concept characters. Like if you wanted to dump all your starting stat points into learn, you're the guy who picks shit up really. You got 20% in everything. So if you're a really good dice roller, this would make your life better. But you got shit hit points, shit sanity, shit willpower, shit essence, you know. So, or you could be, I want to be, like I'm thinking about making a necromancer like Loomsy. I couldn't afford to buy all the necromancy tree because there's a lot of necromantic spells, but I could buy certain paths on the necromancy tree, have it all at 60%, and that would probably be about half my points. And then that gave me 1,000 points to have other shit, you know, like quarter staff or whatever, you know, or club, just buy a club. And, you know, but the problem is that magic only works in certain zones. Tech only works in certain zones. But there's certain skills like climb works in every zone.
Yeah. And talking about backgrounds, we touched on this, you and I, in our first conversation, and you just brought up Loomsy as the example. Loomsy's background was, it started out as, he's walking through the forest. My background, I fell out of a tree. Boom. That was it.
Yeah.
And then it built from there, and you even pulled, you know, things from past campaigns, even prior to me, into the background, you know, and it's easier to start easy. Kiss, you know?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. One of the things that a lot of GMs and players are very into is having a rich backstory for their character. And you can do that in this campaign, but you could also come in with blank slate. It doesn't really matter because I'm probably not going to use your backstory unless you have an interesting backstory, unless you play enough that it makes it worthwhile. Because there's some people who only are able to play once a month, adult schedules, no problem. But I'm not going to sit there and fucking delve into their horribly written backstories and try to figure out ways to make them the important guy when they're only playing once a month or less. You know, it's up to them to make a good scene when they're in with the campaign, because maybe Doc Fulton is having some problems with something and they go and solve it, or something like that. Or like Doc Fulton's fighting Mr. Perry guy, and so that the guy talks to Doc Fulton, he's like, let me hit first every time, because he'll try to parry me. I might not even be hitting, but it's going to fuck up his parry for you when you smash him in the head. Combat tactics in the games are very different than in real life. In the game, since there's no negative, like if somebody in real life is at half health, they're not going to be fighting worth a fuck. In the game, they're fighting just as well until they're on the ground, because simple system.
Right.
So if everybody beats up one dude until he goes down, that's much better than everybody slightly wounding a different person.
Side question for Chris here. Sorry to keep stealing the show. Who, and this is going to sound so bad, who was Doc Fulton in the past? Because Logan mentioned you had spotty memories. That wasn't Cherry, was it?
No. Although, Logan, so, like, I actually played other campaign where I played, actually, you played with the first version of Doc Fulton, and that was, I made a doctor, and I remember we played at, like, Jason's apartment in Mount Prospect. And it was like I based him off of Hawkeye from MASH.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so he evolved from that. And then I played Doc Fulton was a character that I played just before the CSI campaign There was a pretty long going campaign that we had for a while. So I played Doc. I liked that character concept, so I did it again. Except, like, clearly I didn't use the same, like, all the same stuff, and I didn't make them quite as silly. But it was along the same lines. And then he just evolved from there. So, and we did get into some Amber campaign stuff. Well, then, since this is kind of like we have past lives, when we really started getting into it, Logan actually told me, well, you're starting now that I walked pattern, multiple patterns. He's like, well, you can use L Chris knowledge. So it's all kind of like I've been reincarnated all these times. He's like, just use it. If you remember, go. I was like, you fucking piece of shit.
That's something else now with this new system. If somebody said, I want to, I have a lot of Cthulhu Mythos knowledge, so I want to buy a Cthulhu Mythos skill. It's no longer a limiter. It's no longer something that caps your sanity. So if somebody says, I'm going to start off with 60% Cthulhu Mythos, go for it. It's like a very specialized occult, you know? So if Ralph's like, I want to know all kinds of Cthulhu Mythos shit because I know all kinds, fucking buy the skill. Yeah, I don't care. It's yeah. That kind of leads me into a good character, especially for new gamers, is one that reflects their personal knowledge, strengths, weakness. I mean, some people go, I want to play somebody different. Yeah, but I mean, if Ralph has a lot of knowledge of like mechanical stuff and electrician stuff and all that, and he buys those skills, that will help out because Ralph can be like, I'm going to fucking make sure I'm grounded and stuff, and I'm going to make sure the power's off before I start fucking with this electrical stuff. Is people who don't have that kind of skill in real life might not think about that and get a big zap. I know Ralph in real life doesn't bother turning off shit. He just fucking monkeys with it, gets a big zap and laughs about it. But I mean, you know, you could turn it off if you wanted. Yes, you think about it at least.
I just rely on my dice rolls, you know. I'll be fine.
What were you getting ready to say, Ralph?
Then I'm going to leave this one to you, and I know your answer is probably going to be, I don't care. Do you want me to play an incarnation of Suede? Because to me, that was never a chapter that was closed. I can walk away and start fresh.
I was going to say, that's the whole beauty of this campaign is you can literally play Suede if you feel like it. You could play Suede's father. You could play Suede. You could play Suede who ended up becoming a second story man. I mean, yeah, do whatever
multiple Suedes on multiple shadows. I mean, I know because I kidnapped a few of them for certain death scenes.
Yes, of course. That's the beauty of this campaign is if somebody came in and they said, I have this character I played in this era campaign, I'm going to try to put in these points to reflect it and stuff, and then I'll know who I am. And like I think that the best way in a campaign like this to have your backstory is the same way that I did it with Loomsy. You bring it up a little at a time. And you see what the plot team bites. You see what the plot team thinks is good and uses, and the stuff that they don't, it can fall by the wayside, or you can repackage it and put it into something different, and then shit just keeps coming up, you know? Because I think that that's like, if you were to play Suede, then it will give you like little scenes. Like if you're having to drag somebody through the mud because they broke the light, you're like, oh, this isn't the fucking first time for this. Come on. Here we go again. And those kind of little scenes would be more special for you. And
right.
Would add something for the other people.
Yeah. No, I like the idea of bringing some nostalgia back into it. Cause I'm sure Chris did it when he came back into the game, or Corey, or even Jason. You know, just to give another layer of that depth of like.
Jason's playing Rasslin' Rad. Do you remember him?
Oh yeah. What you need, I can get. Right. Well, this is the reason because I play with him on like a couple weeks in. I want to be like, I have tracked you down through the cosmos. Where is my happy pie? And just start throttling him.
That would be great. Yeah.
So if you would allow me that scene, I'm good with that. You know.
If he has that guy here somewhere card, then he will fucking rock that scene. He did that with Chris and rocked Chris's world a little bit because Chris had stolen like this UFO, and he's like, well, I've got an owner's manual for this. Chris like that fucking card, man, you know. And he's like, there you go. And Chris is like, okay, thanks. I don't even know what to do with this now.
It was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. So let's, I think one of the things I like best about this campaign is that this is the kind of game. It's got the kind of players and it's got the kind of world that people are nostalgic about it a couple decades later. I mean, I know Chris has got old ass character sheets sitting around still, you know, from past glories. Yep. And stuff. Do you also, Ralph?
No, I had a great flood. I lost thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of gaming material.
Oh, that's painful. But yeah, it's, I don't know, people keep memories of this sort of game a lot longer than I've ever heard about. You know, I moved two squares and then I used my little bit of extra movement to rotate a little bit and then I hit for max damage. Yeah, none of that shit ever gets told in the story time.
Yeah, but on the nostalgia level, especially with Chris and myself, is we got to move to where we didn't even verbally communicate as players anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, that was horrifying and scary for me. You're bad, bad people. Bad humans. All right. Does anybody have any other questions to bring up?
Last wrap up for Chris. Are you happier being OG? You know, bringing back Doc Fulton and his OG, or do you wish he started over fresh?
No, I was happy because I don't think I ever really got to finish out the Doc.
Okay, so you got that
storyline.
Hollow
so
feeling
I'm getting
too,
that
huh?
Now. Yeah, definitely. Like because we got to Amber, and then like Logan moved, and then it was like it all just stopped. Because I think everyone started MMOing, and then
MMO.
It was MMO and LARP and Nero. That was it. And yeah. I was like,
I was going to reach out to Jeff and get Jeff
at the same time. Oh, Jesus.
No. We will not even discuss that. I don't want to edit.
Edit. Blackball. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Thanks, Logan.
It's been a excellent talk. I'll post it up and see if anybody else liked it. So, does anybody have anything to say to the studio audience before we bugger off?
I never do.
No, you don't. Well,
see you later.
Cool.
Join the game.
Yeah.
Talk to you guys later.
All right. Ciao, gentlemen.